Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
For Call Me Mom again this week, and I'll be with you next week. Appreciate prayers for Call Me Mom's recovery, which is going well. We can afford to have such a great warrior sitting on the sidelines for too long. Well, let's get into it. Today I'd like to discuss the primary. We have an interesting poll by WNRU and CNN conducted in New Hampshire. It shows Clinton failing. Sanders leads 60% to 33%. Not really a shocker to too many people. I mean, a lot of people for a long time have been predicting that the establishment would not be able to get Clinton through. It'll be interesting to see if she loses the Granite State and Iowa, if there's a pathway to the nomination for her. And I hope not. I think Sanders would be easier to beat, but I think they're both beatable. So, pretty interesting poll out today. Also, we had the endorsement of Sarah Palin endorsing Trump. Now, I was part of the Draft Sarah Palin for VP movement 6 months to a year before McCain picked her, and Library of Congress photo captioned our site and stored it for posterity. But so I'm not a Palin basher, but I think it was a bad choice that she made by endorsing Trump over candidates like Rand Paul or Ted Cruz, who have a proven track record of standing up to the establishment. But ultimately, I'm not sure it helps Trump. I think maybe a few conservatives may be persuaded to relook at him with someone of Palin stature vouching for him. I think her endorsement could have went much farther if she had endorsed a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul, but it leaves her open to attack from those who attack her no matter what she does, that she's just looking for the spotlight to stay in the media's attention. I disagree with that. I think she's probably reacting to the fact that Trump is saying a lot of politically incorrect things that our side just isn't willing to say. And that is appealing. It's just shameful that he doesn't have any record to back that up. We definitely need some candidates to get elected who actually have been fighting by our side and not just speaking about it when they need our vote. It'll be interesting to see how Iowa turns out with Iowa. Really could go any way. I think that some candidates like Rand Paul, Ted Cruz might have more support than their national polling shows. Caucus is a different event, though, so we could be really surprised. Trump has a lot of money, so I'm sure he has a good ground operation. It'll be interesting to see what happens in a few days, but hopefully a true conservative can move in and someone we can believe in. Otherwise, it might drive quite a few Republicans to consider maybe voting Libertarian or writing in a candidate of their choice. I want to discuss today the importance of large families and family tradition. I think this is something that all too often in our busy, hectic life, we tend to overlook. But when it comes right down to it, other than our relationship with God, is there anything more important than our families? I mean, seriously, the greatest job on earth is as a father or mother, and I think the most overlooked profession in the world is a stay-at-home mom, or dad for that case. I mean, is there any more important work? And I really mean that. That's not just lip service. Sparta used to treat mothers with the same respect that they did a war hero. And the purpose of it was simply that the children were the future of the nation. And you can't have warriors if there's not mothers having them and, to a certain extent, in Sparta civilization, raising them. Our culture seems to be very, very passionately against families. With each passing day, it seems to get worse. I seen a YouTube video recently on Facebook where they had a woman dressed inappropriately and no one had a problem with it, but mom was breastfeeding with a blanket and people were stopping and making rude comments to her. I mean, just absolutely shocking to me that a mother who's feeding her baby appropriately, covered up, is attacked like that. And it gets to this whole anti-family culture we seem to live in, where the state's trying to replace the parents, and parents are trying to be the children's friend instead of the father or mother, and wives are taken for granted for what they do in the home, and most of the men on TV are portrayed as buffoons who hate and despise their family. And it's really sickening how our culture treats the family. One way we can fight back is, one, to have large families. Really, the national security of our nation, our republic, comes down to us having large families. We're already a minority on this world. With our birth rates continuing at the current rate, that minority is only going to grow smaller and smaller over time. We really need to respect people who choose to have large families and encourage it. Several countries have already woken up to this. I know France and Russia and Denmark all have programs to encourage women to stay home with their children. They're actually paying women for each child they have after one, I believe it is, two, I think it is, in Denmark, which is quite the concept. I mean, some cultures are just waking up to the fact they're not going to exist in anything like they currently are if they don't start having more children. And it comes down to tradition. Will America, will Wisconsin, North Carolina, where I'm from, any of these states look like they did when we were kids? They already don't. Can you imagine how it'll be 10, 20 years from now if the Obama administration gets its will and they're bringing in 100,000 immigrants from Muslim nations in Central America? I mean, it's going to change the culture. And there's a constant assault on our Christian values. And if we don't teach our heritage to our children, we lose that. I wonder how many of us are taking time out each day to impart some sort of wisdom or knowledge that was passed down to us from our ancestors. Have we taken them by the family farm, the homes? Have we taken them to the grave of ancestors who served in the armed forces? Have we explained our faith to them and the importance of that heritage? Don't want to harp on, I'm not trying to preach. I just think that there are so few things we could do more important than strengthen our families and to teach our children our heritage and our traditions. And if you're like me and you come from a family where, unfortunately, you didn't know your father and you didn't grow up with your mother, then create traditions for your children. One of the things I've tried to do is to revisit Civil War, or as we call it in North Carolina, the War of Northern Aggression, but however you call it, we take them to the battlefields. We teach them about the battles, and we teach them about any ancestors I've been able to track down through Ancestry.com. Teach them the importance of cooking. My wife likes to make fresh bread with our kids and to bake with them, to pass that knowledge down to them and to have those little family traditions. I just think it's so vitally important that we put the family at the top of our priority list in every way we possibly can, just to show it the level of importance that it is and not to ever take our family for granted. Well, I'd like to move on to talk about the Middle East. And, you know, as much as things change, they really do stay the same. The current Russian operations remind me so much of the Crimean War. The great book that we have listed in the show notes for anyone who would like to look it up, called Crimean War, really goes into the religious aspects of the Crimean War. And what you had is you had Christians in the Middle East being oppressed by Muslims, deaths. A lot of pilgrims were being attacked and killed. And Russia intervened, and they went to war. And what happened is France and Britain sided with the Muslims and attacked Russia. And you ended up with the Crimean War, as we've all come to know it. And it really goes to explain, one, why Crimea voted to rejoin Russia, that it's almost always been Russian territory, that the graves of hundreds of thousands of Russian soldiers and sailors are located there, that they paid a heavy price for that territory. It's not really taught in Western schools, but it really explains why Crimea voted to rejoin the Soviet, or rejoin Russia, excuse me. And it's interesting because it goes into Western nations siding with Muslim nations against other Christian nations. And we see the same thing now. We have the U.S. aligned with a lot of the terrorist organizations or freedom fighters, whatever you want to call them, in Syria, and with Saudi Arabia. And now we have Russia, who has aligned with the Syrian government, which is by no means an example of what government should be, but it has overwhelmingly protected the Christian minority in that country. And so once again, we see the bedrock of the Crimean War reenacting itself. Now, since Russian operation started nearly 4 months ago in Syria, Russia's has flown 5,662 sorties. They've launched 97 cruise missiles. It's been a very effective campaign. By the way, that is by DefenseTalk.com. And the Russian Defense Ministry today is reporting that due to cloud cover, operations were limited, but in the last day they've flown 16 combat operations, engaging 57 targets of terrorist infrastructure, including self-propelled artillery. Now, the Russian campaign has been overwhelmingly successful, and this is not popular in the Western press. They have a very limited footprint. They're expending a small amount of resources on the operations, and yet they're very successful, and the terrorist death toll is climbing. A lot of us are left to wonder, why can't the U.S. do the same thing? Well, the honest truth that all of us veterans would tell you is we could. It's so disheartening to watch the news, and you see these, what I like to term, political generals who only have their current position because they are PC. There is no Patton serving in the Defense Department making the rank of general anymore, in my opinion. But anyhow, you'll see these political generals on news shows whining that we can't win the wars in the Middle East by military means only. And it's just ludicrous. I mean, we won World War II. Granted, Russia had a big part of that. Britain took a huge burden. but we won World War II. We can win wars with military power. We can't win wars with military power if we have the lawyers leading the charge. And that's what we have. The majority of U.S. sorties, combat sorties flown by our Air Force and Navy, return without dropping a single weapon. Now, there's various excuses for this. I've seen an article recently that it was environmental concerns. I've seen other articles that it was concerns about civilian deaths. But the bottom line is the administration, and this goes back to Bush. I mean, Republicans and conservatives have to be honest. We did not fight to win Iraq either. As long as we have a war, the government has an excuse to take our liberties, to pass unconstitutional Patriot Acts and the like, and to spend and spend and spend to their little heart's content. And the Democrats are just guilty of this because they like their domestic spending. The Republicans, in general, love their, I would like to say defense spending, but it's not, people. I mean, they are paying for some pork barrel spending while cutting our forces to the bone. Our ground forces are so overstretched. I have friends who have been deployed 5 and 6 times. I mean, that's just ridiculous. You got such a small percentage of the population that's got all the burden on their back. And meanwhile, the Pentagon is blowing billions and billions of dollars arming terrorist groups and supporting regimes overseas that hate us. Do not think for a minute that Saudi Arabia cares about any Americans. They hate America, plain and simple. And yet we give them billions of dollars in defense aid. A filthy rich country. Why are we giving them billions of dollars in defense aid? Same for Egypt. I mean, the current Egyptian government is friendly towards the U.S. for the most part. But even when you had radicals running Egypt just a few short years ago, we continued to give them billions of dollars in aid. That's money that could be going to fund our troops' health care or to provide for our troops. We are wasting billions and billions of dollars on an F-35 fighter jet, which is not nearly as capable as an F-15C, which was made in the 70s. And it is vulnerable, very vulnerable to cyber attack. It just doesn't make sense unless you start looking at it from the perspective of they are helping their buddies in the defense industry and they really don't care about the average troops or airmen in this case. When you look at a backwards third world country like Iran was able to hack one of our most advanced secret drones and land it, you have to ask the question, who would these drones be used against? You couldn't use them against a first-rate power like China or Russia. I mean, if Iran can jam them and hack them and make them land, they would be no use against Russia or China. I mean, sure, they're great for spying on American citizens, or if you want to just do general recon over some third world nation. But the billions of dollars we're spending on drones that probably would not work in a real world situation against a first rate power does not make any sense. We need to readjust our military spending and to consider, are we getting the best bang for our buck? And why are we allowing politicians to fight wars that they are obviously not trying to win? I wonder why Western media's default is to always attack Russia. Is it simply that we're stuck in the past and not educated enough to know the difference between the atheist Soviet Union and a orthodox Russia? Or is it that we need an enemy? We need to project that Russia is an enemy to explain, because a lot of Americans are no longer buying that these little third world countries pose a legitimate threat. that doesn't mean we should let a third world nation like Iran have a nuclear weapon. That would be suicide. I mean, they are a threat in that I wouldn't want them to have a nuclear weapon. Yes, we need to check their ambitions. I mean, they support terrorists everywhere. That is a limited threat, though. We don't need carriers and brigades to go after Iran. We could cripple them right now, and we could do it in days. Despite what you hear on CNN, it would be very simple to take out the key infrastructure in Iran, and most veterans will tell you this. But we're not doing that. We're paying them millions of dollars to fund their terrorist actions against Israel and against the U.S., and it's a joke. You have to keep asking yourself, how can Iran be considered an ally by this administration, but an Orthodox Christian country like Russia is defaulted to automatically the enemy? I know it's not popular in a lot of circles to say this, but Islam has declared a war on Europe and on Israel and on the U.S., and they will not be happy until we are dead or crippled or no longer exist. Why aren't we declaring war on the real enemy and fighting with Russia to take care of the real enemy? Now, I know a lot of people get angry because Russia is propping up Assad, but the honest truth is, I don't care. I would rather have a dictator running a Muslim nation and keeping the Christian minorities alive in there and the radicals under control than for the radicals to be freely elected and to be slaughtering Christians, destroying priceless artifacts. The most underreported story after the slaughter of Christian populations in the Middle East over the last couple of years is how much of the world's history is being destroyed. Museums, statues, World Heritage sites, religious sites. I just read an article today that the oldest Catholic monastery was just destroyed by ISIS. We have secular World Heritage sites being destroyed. This is history we can never get back. We can never replace. And yet you don't hear much about it. But you hear constant bloviating about how evil Russia is. Now, I'm not blind. Russia could be a threat, and Russia's always going to look out for itself, which is what we should be doing. We should be looking out for our own agenda, and our agenda is not the same agenda as Saudi Arabia. We should not be at their beck and call. We shouldn't be protecting an oil-rich country that could more than afford to protect itself, even with its limited population. It doesn't make sense. We should not for a moment let our churches or our leaders forget that Christians are being beheaded, tortured, drowned, burnt, hung, including the children, daily. And no one wants to discuss it except for a few brave conservatives. And I hate to say it, most of them are on the internet with small audiences. Even Fox News really does not get into it that often. And when they do, are we shown the pictures? No, because we're too sensitive of a people. It would be too harsh for our delicate sensibilities to see what is happening to women and children and Christian men over there. We've become weak, and we've allowed our government to take us off on policies that have wasted hundreds of thousands of our veterans' lives, because it is hundreds of thousands who are injured, gruesome injuries, and they fought and they gave their all so that we would win, we would be protected, and they were betrayed by their own government. How many families have been destroyed because their father or mother, brother or sister, son or daughter has come home from Iraq or Afghanistan and Syria, because I'm telling you right now, there's been special forces on the ground for over a year. And it drives me crazy every time I hear we have no boots on the ground. We absolutely do. But they've come home and they have traumatic brain injury. They've lost limbs. Or even if they just come back changed because of what they've seen. I'm telling you, my military service changed me. I don't think there's a veteran alive that would tell you it didn't change them. And they come back and they're expected to act the same, to just blend into society and get along and be good little veterans who disappear and never cause an issue. And it's not fair to them. We owe it to them to win the wars we send them to, and then to provide them with the support, health care, and gratitude that they deserve when they get home. And we're not seeing that. I just find it shocking that so many people overlooked us. I mean, people, we have a tiny percentage of this nation's over 300 million people serving in the armed forces. Of that, a large percentage of them are simply backup, personnel, supply, support, lawyers, doctors. We have such a tiny percentage putting their life on the line, sacrificing, carrying the scars with them forever. And we're just going to let millions of Muslims, who some of them will for sure be a threat, into this nation? We're just going to give Iraq to Iran, which we did. Iran controls Iraq now. We failed. That is a lost war. It is just, it's so frustrating as a veteran to see the disrespect that so many in this nation hold our veterans in, and none worse than our politicians. I mean, do we have anyone currently running in the Republican or Democrat primary who has served in combat? I mean, I know Lindsey Graham was a lawyer. I'm trying to think, is there anyone? Does anyone know the sacrifices that their calls for war with Russia would actually entail? I mean, this is insane. We have politicians who, with a straight face, say we should shoot down Russian fighter aircraft. Meanwhile, Russia has a joint defense pact with China. I mean, a war like that would cost millions of lives. Makes absolutely no sense. Our politicians need to wake up to the fact that we will no longer allow our children to be cannon fodder for wars that they're not invested in. I mean, Hillary Clinton appears, from all the latest evidence, to have wanted war in Libya simply to earn money for her and her friends. All the new evidence coming out seems to point in this direction. And it explains a lot. I mean, we had Gaddafi secretly working with the U.S. Now, he was a piece of human garbage. Don't get me wrong. I'm no fan of his. Reagan put him in his place. I'm glad he did. But my point is, what do we got now? Now we got a beehive of radical Islamists running an oil-rich country. And, oh, by the way, they just happen to be on the Mediterranean Sea where they can launch boatloads of people, I'm sorry, refugees, terrorists, whatever you want to call them, into southern Italy and Greece, which is happening. A lot of these so-called war refugees are not coming from Syria. They're coming from North Africa. They're coming from Iraq. They're coming from Saudi Arabia. And they're mostly male. It totally appears to be an invasion and a continuation of the Muslim invasion of Europe that's been raging for hundreds of years. Well, 30 minutes flew by again. I hope that you enjoyed your time, and hopefully Call Me Mom will be doing better soon. Hope you all have a great day. Bye.